You are listening to Talking Star Wars. Welcome, Star Wars fans.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Connor.
And today we're going to talk about Star Wars.
I've never been more steamed. I'm going to try to keep my attitude here as benign and neutral as long as possible.
So this is sort of an extension of our genre spotlight episodes, where instead of focusing on a whole genre, we're going to focus on a specific genre trope as it appears in certain Star Wars media, and that is the wolf and cub story archetype.
And this is a very Eastern archetype, the wolf in this scenario being usually depicted as a ronin of some kind, the cub as a baby child who does not have the ability to protect oneself in the dangerous world. So how does this lone warrior protect this cub in a dangerous world? That's the conceit of the trope. And it has grown quite popular as of late. And in Star Wars, it's been cropping up frequently. So we thought it'd be prime time to review this specific idea and sort of analyze if it's being utilized well, where it shows up, how it shows up, and just see if it merits being represented so frequently in media.
Yeah, so the original inspiration, I mean, you've had stories with, older protagonists and younger can't-protect-themselves charges throughout human history. But the trope and way as it is currently portrayed was popularized and codified by the Shogun film series Lone Wolf and Cub, thus the name of the trope, even though wolves and cubs are not necessarily what we would call them in more Western media. Mm-hmm. So some Star Wars stories that this appears in, which we'll delve in more in depth, but obviously we have The Mandalorian, where our eponymous wolf is Din Djarin and his cub is Grogu. Grogu, this is probably one of the more direct adaptations because, unlike some of our other ones where the cub character, at least can think and speak and act, even if they need protection, Grogu starts as a literal child. At first we think an infant, but later turns on as a traumatized, grade schooler, basically.
He's 50 years old, which for a Yoda species, it's a little bit nebulous because Yoda's 900. So what stage of development should a 50-year-old Yoda be at? We don't really know. But blessedly, this child does not speak. And I think that saves much of the criticism of what arrives with Wolf and Cub stories. But regardless, we have the Mandalorian, the stoic figure in charge of this young, seemingly hapless individual in the form of Grogu, who is actually quite more helpful than he appears to be.
And the second episode lifts something off the ground with the Force, so a whole mudhorn. So,
which again shows this is not just a burden for Din Djarin, but someone he can collaborate with.
Yeah. So using that as an example, we can start to talk about the specific aspects of the wolf and cub trope.
Yeah.
So you have an older, usually male, but not always male, guardian figure, some kind of warrior. They do not have a family of their own, typically, or if they did, they have lost them. Almost like the dad who didn't want the cat. He, doesn't want a child, doesn't want to care for someone. I'm a lone wolf, loner.
I'm jaded.
So alone in the world, in my loneliness. And need to go on their solitary way, cutting a path of death and destruction across the hinterlands of whatever setting they find themselves in. And then through circumstance, whether a job or a random circumstance, they find themselves having to care for a child, sometimes an infant, sometimes older, but someone who needs their protection. And they are not happy about this, but their code of honor will not allow them to leave someone so defenseless for themselves. And whether that they have excuses or rationalizations for why our Mr. Jaded Lone Wolf does not just abandon the child, eventually they come around and adopt often a father figure or older brother figure sort of approach to our cub character. So, and this is the closest example to the quintessential one is Din Djarin and Grogu.
He's jaded. He's a bounty hunter set in his ways. He's cranky, cantankerous, but he is breaking his code for this child. He doesn't want to bring in this bounty because unlike the hardened criminals that he's been dealing with, this is an innocent child. And so, of course, he sort of breaks his code and has to go through this personal journey of, in a large sense, learning what's important in life and also trying to make his way while suddenly being saddled with the responsibilities of protecting a child who, you know, the enemy forces, the antagonists of the story, want to retrieve for dastardly purposes. And at the same time, he has to function as his own self while having this new responsibility, which sometimes, you know, the child's a help and sometimes he's a hindrance.
Yeah, so other aspects, as Connor touched on, that the Wolf and Cub can depict is the child is being exposed to violence and situations that are far beyond the typical purview of their years. They are not in the embrace of their warm and caring parents in a secure environment.
Yeah.
They are being forced at far too young an age to face the cold realities of a violent world. Grogu witnesses death and murder and betrayal on a large scale and is tortured at a young age. And we can even look at some of our other examples then. These are not usually happy stories. Even though we're glad that our child has found a protector, we are sad that they need protection in the first place.
And that brings up the notion of why, you know, this child's in a dangerous position and why are they in a dangerous position? It's not just that they're out there, they're important. So it's kind of like a Merlin and King Arthur. This old wizard is raising this child in a sense as his ward in order to rule the kingdom. With Grogu, he is the young version of Yoda. Us as an audience understands that he is going to be a very important figure in the Force somehow, because there's only one Yoda and a Yaddle, but still.
Yeah, and then there's always reasons that the cub care figure is more important than just an adoptee, even if that's the primary, you know, otherwise no one would pursue them. So other Wolf and Cub pairings that we see in Star Wars, some people might think, oh, it's Ahsoka Tano and Anakin Skywalker. But the first time we meet Ahsoka, she's already skilled with the lightsaber, independently takes on a mission, has her own thoughts and opinions, and can cut down battle droids by herself. So while she needs personal growth and like an older brother or maybe parent figure, she's already a teenager. She is not a cub.
This is more of a dynamic duo. This is a Batman and Robin, where each force is capable on their own.
She is a sidekick, not a cub. Mm-hmm. And you can even see this in some other media as it goes on. Like The Last of Us, Ellie starts as a cub and graduates to sidekick.
We have God of War, where we have got Kratos and Atreus, where Atreus is, you know, his son in charge, and then he develops into a sidekick.
Yeah, and it could also be the relative danger of the setting and the relative power. Like Ahsoka Tano was a Jedi, so she doesn't need a lot of minding. Ellie is a adolescent girl in a post-apocalyptic setting in The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. She needs protection from an adult. And it is the same with Atreus. He is battling gods and dark elves and who else knows what else the Norse pantheon wants to throw at the father-son combo. So you need big, strong daddy Kratos to protect you. Even though Atreus, you know, does have power in his own right, he is the cub in need of protection.
Marvel has been somewhat dabbling with this to a lesser degree. I mean, it's more so in the state of Anakin and Ahsoka, where we have Hawkeye, where we have Ant-Man Quantumania, where we have this secondary legacy character taking up the mantle of an older hero. Not so much Wolf and Cub, but we do see a little bit of that at the very end of the most recent Thor, where he has a young girl who's all alone in the universe, and it doesn't feel as warranted and earned as other media, but he has a little helpless child that he needs to protect now, who happens to be played by his daughter, and that's not nepotism. But moving back to Star Wars.
Okay, Connor, try to keep your capitalist disaffection under control. So other examples of the Wolf and Cub dynamic in Star Wars, so we can look at, like, you know, again, not Ezra Bridger and Kanan Jarrus from Rebels. Ezra Bridger's already living by himself and caring for himself by the time the series starts. He needs a mentor figure, but he does not need a protector.
It's certainly Kenobi.
With 10-year-old Leia Organa.
She has a little bit more agency than Grogu, but at the same time, she does not possess any of the skill of Grogu. And her arc isn't as, special, heartwarming as it is with Grogu, but I would say that with Kenobi, it is very helpful for his character in sort of shaking out of his fixation with protecting Luke at this time. And kind of breaking out of his fear of not being able to effectively protect someone like he was able to out in the world. So he develops from that relationship in some regard, at least.
Yeah, so it's certainly a Wolf and Cub story then with Kenobi and Leia, mm-hmm. Where he, and she's, even though she's not particularly phased immediately, she doesn't quite realize she's in a Wolf and Cub story. She's mm-hmm. trying to go at her alone, and she's like, oh, no, wait, I do need this stranger named Ben to protect me mm-hmm. because the world is a more dangerous place than Alderaan.
Right. Which is an interesting story for the show, but by the time we see her again in A New Hope, she's the one who saves everyone's skins. So it's not like she became less headstrong and learned that from Kenobi. It felt like she was more taken on a ride in this show compared to a Grogu who has to ask, you know, do I belong with the Jedi? Do I belong with my family, my dad? That's where my, again, disdain's a strong word. My combativeness with the Wolf and Cub storyline crops up a little bit.
Yeah.
While I bitch about that, I will say that, again, the Kenobi side of things works. Him breaking out of his shell and having Leia be the cause of that, I think, is a fantastic idea, and it helps to solidify their connection in A New Hope.
Yeah. Qui-Gon Jinn would like young Anakin Skywalker to admit he's a cub in The Phantom Menace, but he's like, mm-hmm. no, I'm going to board this fighter and go cause trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when you're a Jedi, you get to cheat past the normal rules.
Yeah.
Even if you're a Grogu or an Anakin Skywalker. Other examples from Star Wars media that come to mind, Connor?
So Boba Fett doesn't have a little child that he needs to take care of, so that's a strong thing. In Star Wars Visions, I would say one qualm that we had with Season 2 is that many of the stories featured this wolf and cub dynamic, whether it be with two sisters who are trying to just avoid Imperial control, or a father and daughter who are trying to explore caves of Kyber. It's a dynamic that, with its influx in the Star Wars universe and outside of the Star Wars universe, I'm ready for a new archetype. Like, give me the troll under the bridge. Like, give me six trolls under a bridge. Yeah, just something.
One place where this shows up is the Bandits of Golok, Season 2 of Visions, where we have an older brother who's trying to care for his Force-sensitive younger sister. So he's not quite the loner warrior you expect from Wolf and Cub. But mm-hmm. again, when you have a precocious child who needs to be protected by someone, again, and then younger child realizes she's mm-hmm. in a more violent world than she thought she was, but not quite falling into the archetype.
Gareth Edwards, who directed Star Wars Rogue One, his follow-up film is going to be a science fiction movie called Creator, which is a Wolf and Cub storyline between a cyborg man and his child charge. And it's just, I don't mind the archetype, I just mind the frequency of the archetype. But, you know, I think that looking back, it stands out very well in The Mandalorian, because it's a symbiotic relationship that Din and Grogu have, where they are both challenged and they both grow out of it. That's what makes it a successful Wolf and Cub storyline that doesn't make my hair turn white.
Yeah, we get hints of this relationship also in the Liberation of Ryloth arc in the Clone Wars, where there's a young Twi'lek child who makes the acquaintance of two clone troopers that protect her. In return, she shows them, you know, ways to get around the town that they're in and Ryloth. So that's just sort of a one episode example, but you can see, you know, the by the book clones getting very attached to this young girl by the end.
You mentioned the Bad Batch, where we have more clones in charge of a young sister type.
Yeah. So we continue our precocious child helped by dangerous adults theme, which is sort of Wolf and Cub adjacent in the Bad Batch. We have Omega, who's, you know, is a little bit older, probably, you know, similar to Ellie, I suppose, in The Last of Us, like 10 or 12, but then ages up and gets older and more capable as the series goes on. But at the start, she is certainly a child who needs to be protected by the clones and older brothers who can commit violence on her behalf.
And you said she had a little bit more development in that show compared to your typical Leia?
Yeah, she's probably, same as Grogu, she is one of the main characters of the Bad Batch in the same way that Grogu is one of the main characters of The Mandalorian. And Omega goes through character development and gets more capable and takes on more responsibilities as the series goes on. But certainly for most of the first season, she is in more of this damsel child role.
So how would you say compared to something like, you know, I'd say Mandalorian works well. Does this trope work well in the world of the Bad Batch?
Yeah, I know some people find it frustrating, but I think it's she's a realistically depicted traumatized child. So she, even though she's living in a dangerous world, she still sometimes falls back on that things could be better. And her idealism is a important part of the Bad Batch themselves, trying to not just survive, but thrive in an Imperial world. Mm-hmm. So they're not just going day to day, but have some ideals to live up to.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I know some people find it frustrating that sometimes Omega is a precocious child and gets herself into bad situations.
Mm-hmm. So it's great to see that we have some development there with her. And with Leia, I can kind of forgive it not having the similar kind of development in Kenobi because, you know, that show is about the singular character of Kenobi. And while, yes, it is unfortunate that it mirrors the relationship of a wolf and cub, it's so much more about his growth and development rather than Leia's as well. But why is this trope coming up so much, other than the fact that it's in the popular zeitgeist? I think there's a greater conversation that could be had about why this is a story that's so relatable to the general crowd.
So, part of me is like, hey, single parenthood is becoming more common in today's day and age, and people having to figure out non-traditional structures of family. Mm-hmm. It's become more acceptable to depict non-traditional families in media. And so Star Wars is jumping on that bandwagon a little bit
with that's great insight. Yeah.
A whole of a found family aspect, or like you might just have a dad or just have a mom, but that's fine. You also see the same message of a single parent is fine and I Am Your Mother from Vision Season 2. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other constructions of parenthood are becoming more common across Star Wars media.
Even Rey adopting the last name of Skywalker, even though that's not the
favorite thing. Yeah.
It's not the tightest narrative plot point. It represents that idea of found family and presenting and representing yourself as a matter of what you build rather than a matter of where you came from. So, yeah, I can definitely see that being something that, you know, was represented in the original Star Wars, because that is all about your found family and your friends and your sister who you shouldn't make out with. But, you know, nowadays it's been reflected in the fans who are now grown up and, you know, might be in that position of being single parents and having the, you know, children watch this media being, you know, children of single parent homes. So I can definitely understand that sort of representation reflected more so in popular media. Let's just, I don't know, like I said, throw a couple other tropes out there while we're choosing our media. Let's again see some trolls under the bridge. Let's have the uncle who's taking the kids out on an adventure and gets into trouble. I don't know, just something that's not the same, please.
Yeah, and I would say if we want to talk about some more wolf and cub stories that are present in Star Wars, just to round it out,
mm-hmm.
you have this depicted in the novel Brotherhood, where a young Zabrak Padawan who's having trouble connecting to the Force or understanding how to connect to the Force teams up with Anakin Skywalker to come rescue Obi-Wan on the Nemoidian home on the planet of Nemoidia, because Anakin needs the help and he's like, I can bring a 10-year-old into danger, why not? So in that case, Anakin and Obi-Wan are like the competing wolves who are like, Anakin, why did you bring the youngling into a war zone? It's like, the galaxy is a war zone, Obi-Wan. And she wanted to come with me. And I needed her help. And Obi-Wan is like, we're going to talk about this after we escape this dangerous situation. Ventress is no longer trying to bad both of us. So you get that trope in a couple other novels. Yeah, but I would say visual media leans more into having younger protagonists than some of the expanded universe, mm-hmm. which can often feel like they're more oriented towards a young adult to adult audience. Or not wanting needing to have this generational split. So it's like all of our protagonists are adults or they're all children.
Sure. And let's not try... Well, The Phantom Menace is not the best example of the audience representation. It's like, children will enjoy this movie if we put a child in it. It's not, it didn't need that in the original Star Wars. We didn't need to have Luke be 10 in order to want to be Luke or to be Leia.
Yeah, there are no children in A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Or Empire Strikes Back.
I think there might be some on Cloud City.
In the background?
Yeah, but yeah, there's not... Even in the Return of the Jedi, there's no child focus. And
yeah, the Ewoks are fuzzy, short, violent adults.
Mm-hmm. Italians.
You do get some baby Ewoks, but they don't do anything other than look cute.
Right.
We don't have any child Ewok characters. So yes, then we have...
That's the next Child and Cub story. It's the literal cub of an Ewok cub child. And Yoda.
Yeah. You get a little bit, I suppose, of the Wolf and Cub in the Aftermath trilogy, because we have the son of Nora Wesley, Snap Wexley.
Mm-hmm.
But he starts, he's at the age of 15. He had to take care of himself for a while.
Yeah.
And he's already programmed himself a very violent and disturbing droid named Mr. Bones that does all of his murder for him. So I think I'm not going to put that one in this genre either. You have to have more than just age generational gap. There has to be this level of caretaking in a violent situation by a lone warrior. So in the case, we don't actually have too many examples for you to get angry about, Connor.
No, it's just the two. It's just all the other ones that look like it that make me mad. But, you know, I'm so glad that we discuss this topic, because one, it helps me distinguish the fact that there are differences and that there's some variety in these Wolf and Cub stories, and when it does work, kind of recognizing why it works and the growth that's needed on either side of the relationship to make this work. So if they ever do it again, don't.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to our dissection of the Wolf and Cub trope as it appears in Star Wars and how it's related to other media, and some musings on why we think it may have arisen.
We'll see you soon.